WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
What is up, beautiful people? You are now locked into WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. On this Wednesday, November 9th, the day after Election Day, I really hope you all got out there and expressed your right to vote. As many big decisions were made in your local and national government. So, we will try to really break up the monotony of all of the election talk in the last 24 hours. Heck, even the last year, right? And we'll talk some sports, all right? If you were not glued to the election and were glued to the sports world, you guys know that the second college football playoff poll was announced. We'll riddle down who the poll in the committee frowned upon and who they really like right now, especially when it comes to the top four teams in the world of college football. Also, boy, oh boy, the Detroit Red Wings have done it, folks. It took them a long, long time. You have to date all the way back to 1997 to be exact. But the Detroit Red Wings have finally got a win on the road in Philly over the Flyers. I can't believe that. Yeah, we'll chat about how that happened. And we also will have a pretty cool feature centered on Amy Foudy, who is the head turf manager at Michigan State University. A very cool feature that kind of dives into what exactly she does and how she preps the turf at Spartan Stadium and her entire tenure as a turf manager. A very cool story you don't want to miss. And on the back end of the show, Mark Cuban, who of course owns the Dallas Mavericks, he has banned the credentials of two ESPN reporters. And we'll tell you why. Cuban may have an interesting point here, all right? That and more. Call in to be a part of today's show, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. You can also go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports, or even tweet me at Al Martin, WKAR, or at WKAR_sports. Let's get right to it. Here are your current sports quick hit headliners. All right, and we begin things with that second college football playoff poll being announced. Get this, the top three in the playoff remain the same, with Alabama topping the charts, Clemson sitting second, Michigan holding safe at third, and there was a change of name at the final position. Really no surprise here. Texas A&M fell to Mississippi State. Texas A&M was named as the fourth team last week. Undefeated Washington has now moved up into that spot. The Big Ten well represented in the poll. Ohio State on the outside, just looking in at number five. Wisconsin as the top two team, as the top two lost at number seven, I should say. Penn State at number 10 and Nebraska at number 19. Now, Western Michigan, get this, continues to climb as well as moving up two spots to number 21. All right, and they got a dub last night. MSU football, I'm going to get to WMU in just a second. MSU football to play Northwestern on Friday night. MSU football will be playing under the lights Friday night in 2017. We dove into that discussion last week on the show. The Spartans game against Northwestern is one of six the Big Ten has scheduled next year. Traditionally, MSU plays their first game of the season the Friday before Labor Day. But as of now, the Spartans have their bye week scheduled in that spot. The Spartans will take on the Wildcats Friday, October 27th. 2017. And again, going back to Western Michigan, the Broncos live up to rowing the boat another day, all right? Number 14, Western Michigan defeated Kent State last night, 37-21. Western got off to a shaky start at one point, being down 14-0 in the first quarter, but the team managed to rally with the help of Javion Franklin, who rushed for 134 yards and a TD, and Fabian Johnson, who rushed for 125 yards. Western is ranked as the 21st team in the college football playoff polls and will look to go 11-0 when they take on the University of Buffalo next week. Eastern Michigan rallied back from a 21-0 first quarter deficit to beat Ball State 48-41 last night EMU quarterback Brogan Roback. He threw for a career-high 468 yards, 3 TDs. Ball State took a 41-40 lead with a minute and 35 remaining on Riley Neal's quarterback sneak. Eastern Michigan answered with an 8-play, 86-yard drive in just over a minute. Roback escaped pressure to find John Nupalo for a 35-yard gain, and Ian Erickson punched it in from the 1 with 32 seconds left. Ball State drove it to midfield, but Neal's Hail Mary attempt was intercepted by Daquan Pace. This win puts EMU at 6-4 this season, and you know what that means, folks. If you hit 6, you become bowl eligible. Very cool stuff. They will take on Northern Illinois next week. The number 15 Michigan State women's volleyball team is looking to beat Purdue for a second time this season when they host the Boilermakers tonight at 7 p.m. MSU has beaten Purdue 4 out of their last 5 meetings, with their last meeting coming just 10 days ago, where the Spartans rallied back from a first set loss to win 3-1. Now, MSU is currently 21-5, the team's best record at this point in the year since all the way back to 1988. Now, after tonight, the Spartans will finish out the season against number 17 Michigan on Saturday. So wishing Kathy George and her squad all the luck in the world tonight. And hey, on the back of Andreas Athanasiou, the Red Wings ended a 5-game skid and won in Philly for the first time since 97. Detroit came from behind twice in the game to force a shootout, where Jimmy Howard stopped all 3 shots and Athanasiou was the lone goal scorer. Other highlights were Tomas Tatar finding the net for the second time this year and forward Tyler Bertuzzi making his NHL debut. The Wings will look to make it 2 straight when they host Vancouver on Thursday.
The Kaiser in full flight. Athanasiou right to the middle, right in on goal. Oh, and he gets it in the back.
He said it's a goal.
The referee says it's in. He hit the bar earlier. He hit the bar again. This time it's in, and it's a tie game. 2-2. The bar in the third to tie for the win. Does it? Athanasiou ends it. Andreas Athanasiou has the Red Wings get their first win in Philadelphia since 1997.
All right, the Detroit Pistons will be in Talking Stick Resort Arena. Is that really the name of that arena, Isaac?
Yeah, probably the second worst in the NBA, only behind Sacramento's Sleep Train.
That is horrible. The Talking Stick Resort? Okay, yeah, they'll be on the road. Talking Stick Resort Arena tonight, where they will face the Phoenix Suns, 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Detroit is looking to bounce back from a 114-82 loss to the L.A. Clippers. That took place on Monday night. The Suns are just 2-6 this season and will enter the game on a 2-game losing streak after falling to the Trailblazers last night. Also, folks, Detroit Tigers second baseman Ian Kinsler finally won his first gold glove yesterday. Kinsler beat out Boston's Dustin Pedroia and Robinson Cano of Seattle. In 2016, Kinsler was tied for the most defensive runs saved in the American League with 12 and had a fielding percentage of .988. According to BaseballReference.com, Kinsler has been worth 15.2 defensive wins above replacement in his career and feels he has improved as a defender as he has gotten older, crediting the Tigers' defensive coordinator, Matt Martin.
Take it with a purpose.
Hit the other way, and a diving stop. Kinsler to his feet. Got him at first base. What a play by Ian.
That wraps up your current sports quick hit headliners. If you want to be a part of our airwaves, we encourage it, all right? 517-355-WKAR is the number to call. 517-355-9527. You can also go to Facebook.com/currentsports. Tweet us at @AlMartinWKAR or @WKAR_sports. So much to get to. Time is a-wasting. Here we go.
Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da
down and I'm mountains, moonshots, spend it on the have-nots, money, we make it, for we see it, you take it, oh.
Sorry to keep you waiting. Complicated business. Complicated. Thank you very much. I've just received a call from Secretary Clinton. She congratulated us, it's about us, on our victory. And I congratulated her and her family on a very, very hard-fought campaign. I mean, she fought very hard. Hillary has worked very long and very hard over a long period of time, and we owe her a major debt of gratitude for her service to our country. I mean that very sincerely. Now it's time for America to bind the wounds of division. Have to get together. To all Republicans and Democrats and independents across this nation, I say it is time for us to come together as one united people. Time.
Oh, honey, did I can't pay my taxes. Oh, make me wanna holler and throw up both my hands. Yeah, and make me wanna holler and throw up both my hands.
Oh. Was that a long night or what? Welcome to WKAR's Current Sports, ladies and gents, boys and girls. I am your host, Al Martin. It is the day after Election Day here in the land of the free, the United States of America. If you're like me, you're still wiping the crust out your eyes. I stayed up all night, glued to my television, watching that election. And man, oh man, there have been many things posted on social media with those of you out there who are happy with the outcome. Not just about Donald J. Trump becoming our 45th president here in America, but also local decisions in your respective local government. Mix of emotions for many Americans out there. You know, many are happy, and many are confused and distraught right now. And we plan on taking your mind off of it, or at least trying to, throughout the rest of this hour. But before we move forward, I do want to say this. I do want to get this off my chest. As I always say, folks, my grandparents used to always tell me this. There are two things that us here on this planet will never agree on. Okay? None of us are going to have a universal opinion when it comes to two things. Politics and religion. They used to always tell me that growing up, and I never understood what they were saying, because I mean I was a little tyke when they would always say that, right? But as I've gotten older, that has certainly reigned true in my life, without a doubt. And no matter who you were rooting for last night, you know, Republican, Democrat, Hillary Clinton, Donald Trump, whoever it was, at the end of the day, someone was going to be elected as the 45th president of the United States. It will be Donald Trump, and we are all going to have to get used to that, whether you wanted it or you didn't. Simple as that, folks. And mad props, and I just want to get this off my chest before we move forward. Mad props to everybody out there who understand just how important this right is every 4 years, heck, every 2 years. when you are given the opportunity to vote and hit the polls, that is your voice. It's one of the most important rights, arguably, in my opinion, the most important right as an American in this nation. For you to get up and take some time out your day and to hit the polls and to vote for who you feel deserves a certain position in local and national government and for proposals that you feel will affect your life positively, you are letting your voice heard. So mad props to everybody who went out there and expressed that right to vote. But for those who did not, shame on you. I'm big on this, folks. When I was in college, my fraternity, Alpha Phi Alpha Fraternity Incorporated, we do a national program every year entitled A Voteless People is a Hopeless People. So this is very dear to my heart. It always has been. And when I was a student on campus, you know, we used to put on this program and we would go out and just park on campus somewhere. Remember one year we did it at The Rock and we would just ask people, hey, are you registered to vote? And we would register folks to vote. And, you know, it really does break my heart, folks, because, you know, I'm from the west side of Detroit and I have a lot of friends still there. A lot of people that I know there, family there. And it really broke my heart when I flipped on social media last night. And as I began to scroll, there were individuals out there that I know who will remain nameless here that said that, hey, my vote doesn't count. You know, what's going to happen is going to happen. I'm not going to go out there and hit the polls. That to me is only one word. Ignorance. Simple as that, folks. Those who don't understand the power of their voice. So those that voted, much love to you. And those that didn't, much love to you. But I really hope you become enlightened as your time here in America moves along, all right? I really hope you do. Because it is a crime not to get out there and hit the polls. And what really gets me is when those who don't want to complain about what's happening in our government. You didn't vote. I mean, come on, dude. You didn't vote. All right. So with that aside, that is how we begin today's Current Sports. Let's keep it pushing. 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. And before I move forward, I want to shout out our engineer, Isaac Constance, who was one hard-working brother yesterday. I got a chance after we did Current Sports Radio. My man Isaac, he was a part of my first election, Michigan first election here in the College of Communication Arts and Sciences, in which the J School put on. And they had over 200 students in all total, over 350 people covering the election here in the state of Michigan, marking the biggest election coverage in the state. And Isaac, you were a part of it. You are a part of the J School here at Michigan State University. Countless professors, they were in and out actually here at Studio S as Current State did roll-ins throughout the night as well. Mark Bayshore, our host of Current State, did a great job anchoring that all night, and you had a hand in that as well. But man, that had to be a crazy day for you. I know you're running off of probably like 2 hours of sleep right now.
Yeah, about two and a half, so really can't complain. Got that extra half hour in there. But yeah, what I want to say too is I'm also a political science double major.
Yeah, you are, right.
On your note about your vote doesn't matter, that common misperception in America. Everybody says the political elites control it or the electoral college has the independence to vote how they choose. That's actually not how it works. Although the popular vote sometimes is misconstrued into a different assortment of how the votes are split up between two candidates, the popular vote in every state always wins. Only one state in America actually even splits their electoral votes by proportion of who votes for who. That's mm-hmm. Nebraska. Every other state, whoever gets the majority, that's who the electoral votes go to. So if you didn't like what happened in Michigan, if you liked what happened in Michigan, then it's your job to influence that sort of change in the future. But it is not on any political elite. It is not on any force out of your control, it is on you to go and vote. And there are other ways of political activism, too. If you don't want to do that, go protest. Go make a sign. Go do something. But you can be active. You can have your voice be heard. In no way is it a lost cause.
Wait, I'm just going to say this and keep it. I'm going to move it to sports here. But I just want to say this. What really irks me is those who sit back, don't vote, don't protest, don't do anything, and just talk. And just you know, want to voice on social media how displeased they are and throw stones at the government. Do something about it.
Yep.
If there is anything that irks me, it's somebody who is all talk and no action. Simple as that. And what really gets me being an African-American male here in America, African-Americans, who you know the history when it comes to voting rights here in America. Many have fought, bled, and even died for this right. And you choose to chill on November 8th. College football playoff, folks, was released last night on national television. It is the second release of the college football rankings, according to the CFB committee. And we did have a bit of a change, which we all expected, right? I mean, you know, when you look at Texas A&M was a part of the top four last week. Texas A&M, what happened this past weekend? Texas A&M falls to Mississippi State, and undefeated Washington, who I believed deserved to be in the top four, moved up into that spot. So, you know, really not surprising here. And I got the top four right, and that really never happens. And I got numbers 1 through 7 right, actually, when it comes to the overall poll. Numbers 8, 9, and 10, just kind of flip-flop for me. But so I really wasn't surprised at the rankings. And again, as I stated at the top of the hour, when it comes to the Big Ten being well-represented in the poll, you have Ohio State right on the outside looking in. There were a few pundits out there that actually thought that the committee would look upon Ohio State and say, okay, maybe they are that number 4 team. There were many out there that maybe thought, you know, in the bold, quote-unquote bold prediction, that Ohio State, the Buckeyes, were going to be among that number. But they are in the conversation. Nonetheless, again, Ohio State and Michigan will play one another at the Shoe in Columbus, Ohio. So that's going to be a determining factor as to which one of those teams get in. Right now, Michigan is sitting pretty, okay? Undefeated. No surprise there. Clemson at number 2. Alabama, the top team in college football, no surprise there. Washington, though, finally getting the respect that they deserve. I believe Washington can hang with anybody in the nation. They are a fantastic team, and it's really cool just to see UW there. So, you know, when you look at this, you know, what I really thought, and again, it's these rankings mean nothing. They're going to completely change on December 4th, all right? That's the key date. That's when the final rankings come out. But the committee knows what they're doing. I mean, what I find so interesting with what the committee does is that the College Football Playoff Committee, they love to sort of throw in just some controversy around this time of the year just to keep college football in the news, to keep the fandom going, to keep the conversation going, because if you're talking about college football, you're interested, and that's always a good thing for the overall sport. So for me, that's what more so last week was about. You know, throwing Texas A&M above Washington and putting them in the top four, they were just trying to stir the pot a little and get people talking. They succeeded, right? In my opinion, they certainly succeeded. But, you know, when you look at this second ranking here, I just think they flat out got it right because, I mean, there was no room for debate here. You know, if anything, maybe you could argue, okay, Ohio State maybe at number 4. But when you look at the overall body of work for Washington, no brainer. Washington, an undefeated program from a Power 5 conference. I mean, hey, you got to put them in, right? You got to put them in. So, you know, there was no wiggle room left for voters, I believe. You know, with A&M losing to Mississippi State, UW beating up Cal, the Aggies are out, the Huskies are in. Simple as that, all right? A few other, you know, takeaways. Again, no other top four made sense to me. Again, they all have bulletproof resumes, undefeated, from Power 5 conferences. They're in line to win their leagues and beat some pretty good clubs along the way. This was a controversy-free decision, all right? And, you know, what I also found intriguing was that, you know, LSU, and I'm pretty sure Isaac has a comment on this. You know, LSU, the Tigers, when you look at the overall poll, the Tigers were number 13 just a week ago in that first revealing. Just a week ago, the Tigers sat at 13. Now they're all the way down to number 24. My question is what exactly happened in those 7 days? You know, I don't know. You know, LSU, they were locked in a scoreless tie for three quarters with clear-cut number one team in America in Alabama before ultimately falling in the fourth and final frame. I thought, if anything, that, you know, there are no things, there's nothing considered a moral victory in sports. I don't believe in that. But at the same time, they hung with the numero uno, the clear numero uno team in college football in Alabama this past weekend. Yet they fall from 13 all the way to 24. That was a bit of a question mark for me there. So I did have a problem with that. You know, so for me, I agree with the top four. And, hey, you know, Penn State, I predict that they would be in the top 10, which they are as well. But when you look at the entire spectrum of things, I'm wondering, I mean, the LSU dropping from 13 to 24, a team that hung with Bama this past weekend, Isaac, that took me by surprise.
Yeah, it shocked me as well. And I think that's the big difference, honestly, between one loss. It's not so much the quality of the loss or who it is, but when you're looking at these multi-loss teams, there just becomes more and more of them. So then they have to provide some sense of stratification of the teams. But I think that's ridiculous too. I think, honestly, teams should be rewarded for playing a good game against Bama. Not to say they should rise in the rankings, but that should be considered a push, more or less. Just like when MSU lost to Michigan, nobody was saying, "Oh, this team's horrible." That's not when the realization came about. Everybody, if anything, was a little bit heartened and inspired by the team's performance. For LSU to play this game so tight, to have a scoreless first half, to have the attacking opportunities within that first two periods, they should have been rewarded in terms of a lower drop in the rankings, just maybe 13 to 15, something like that. But yeah, there are all sorts of anomalies in the college football rankings. And at the end of the day, as much as you and I talked about how they want to stir up controversy with the top five or six, let's be real here. The top 13 to 24 don't matter. If you're not in a New Year's Six Bowl,
no, they don't.
From there, it's all about the matchups that they select for the different bowl games.
It does give you an insight. That's why I love looking at the entire spectrum, because it does give you an insight as to what criteria they're looking at to judge who they believe to be the top teams in college football. You know what I mean? Because there is no, you know, and that's why I love it, though. I must say that. This is long overdue. However, I do think there's flaws in the system. I think there needs to be, and I think we all agree on this, there needs to be more than four teams deciding who is the elite in college football. They need to expand that for sure. This is much better, though, than the BCS system. Let's put it that way.
So much better.
Because now you have a committee that can come in and can look at the entire spectrum of college football and weigh in what they personally believe to be the most important factors in determining who those top four teams are. What makes it, you know, bittersweet, though, is that that criteria varies from person to person to person. There's no uniformity. There's no uniformity that says, okay, if you win your conference, that should be the number one thing that we look at. You know what I mean?
Yep.
I mean, for some, that could be the second or even third thing. You know what I mean? Or strength of schedule. You know, there's not somebody saying, okay, when you evaluate this, strength of schedule should be the number one thing you look at. No, it's subjective to everybody.
Yeah.
And that's what makes it so sticky, but it's also what makes it quite beautiful, because it adds a human element to deciding those teams.
Exactly. I'm one of those guys who doesn't want to push for mechanized refereeing or something like that, where there's no error whatsoever. You like having the controversy. At the end of the day, let's remember, this is a game. Mm. Everybody wants to watch it. It's like a play that unfolds live before your eyes. That's the great thing about any sport, no matter which it is. In college football, having the drama of the polls, the selection. I remember being a little kid when LSU was selected for the 2007 BCS championship game.
Mm-hmm.
And we were chattering. We were eating our nails. We were doing everything, all sorts of superstitions. When I was a little kid, actually.
You're a superstitious guy, Isaac?
No. This is weird. I've become more superstitious as I've gotten older and more intelligent.
Really?
Yes, I've
always been
quite bizarre.
A little bit superstitious. Yeah. I've always been a little bit. So go ahead.
I cross my fingers. So usually, you know, I cross the index in the middle, but I also cross the ring and the pinky.
Right.
And I cross my arms. I cross my legs. I cross everything I can for LSU to get that 2007 BCS championship nomination because they were the first 10-2 team ever selected.
Right.
That was fun, you know, and I do like that element of it. Now, as you mentioned earlier, I would love to see the four-team playoff expanded because let's be real. If Western Michigan runs the table, beats every team from here on out by three scores or more, they're not getting selected.
Strength of schedule. They play in the MAC, and that's always going to hurt them in that argument. Even though, nonetheless, what P.J. Fleck has done out in Kalamazoo is pretty impressive.
Exactly. But let's say these guys have what it takes to go on to a big goal bowl game, a New Year's Six, which I think they probably will. An opposition that looked decent against a playoff team. Let's say Louisville doesn't make it and Western upsets Louisville. Hypothetical scenario. Then that'll start talking, should we expand the playoff? And we certainly should. Teams that go undefeated deserve a chance. It's not like you've got hordes of them every year. I'd love to see a further system, which is either six or eight teams.
WMU for Rose Bowl. That's my campaign right now, all right? That's the election I'm interested in, all right? I also want to make this point of the teams on the outside of the playoff looking in. Louisville. You just mentioned the Cardinals just now, Isaac. Louisville in prime pouncing position, I would say, to eventually gain entry, in my opinion, all right? The number six Cardinals, they only have Wake Forest, Houston, and Kentucky left on the schedule. Coach Bobby Petrino is not afraid of some style points, all right? And I expect Lamar Jackson and his team to possibly throw up some big numbers the rest of the way. But Louisville, that is my team to watch in this thing. Again, Wake Forest, Houston, and Kentucky left. Not real sexy teams, all right? You know, Houston, I mean, Houston started off hot this year, but quickly traded down, right? At the same time, if the Cardinals can throw up some big points and turn some heads in the college football world, I think the committee will take a serious look at the Cardinals to possibly gain entry into that playoff. It's going to take some big numbers, though. Again, you're playing Wake Forest, Houston, and Kentucky. You got to trounce them. And, you know, coaches say all the time, and they give us the coach speak, that they don't run up the score and they don't care about style points. It's all about winning, blah, 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 blah. But with this playoff, the game has changed now. And they know that's going to weigh into this whole thing. So, Petrino is certainly going to be looking at how much they beat these next three teams as the college football year winds down here. Because whether he wants to admit it or not, I'm sure behind closed doors in his coaching office, he is weighing that factor.
Oh, yeah. The other thing, too, is behind those closed doors, he's telling Lamar Jackson when they play Houston, go and get this. Because will be the Heisman race deciding game.
Yeah.
Him versus another quarterback of not equal caliber, but similar standing in Greg Ward Jr.
Yeah, Ward.
That'll be a side-by-side comparison. And Lamar Jackson on that opportunity will have the chance to claim himself a Heisman Trophy for Louisville and send this program to new heights.
I've been waiting on that quarterback matchup all year. Let's hit our first break. When we come back, we will bring to you a very cool feature centered on Amy Foudy, who is Michigan State University's head turf manager. We'll also continue to take your calls, and also we'll talk about the Red Wings. You know, for the first time since 97, winning in Philly. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
From the moment you wake up, through the chaos of your busy morning, Morning Edition is there with you.
Good morning, I'm Steve Inskeep. Protesters have been
through all you have to do, we'll bring you all you need to know every weekday on Morning Edition from NPR News.
The morning's news between 5 and 9 on 90.5 WKAR. He never ran for anything, and now he's running everything.
And we're going to be doing a job that hopefully you will be so proud of your president. You'll be so proud.
What do the people who voted for Donald Trump expect from him? What can he deliver? All next time on The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI, Public Radio International. The Takeaway, today at 3 on AM 870 WKAR.
Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527 is the number to call in if you want to be a part of our airwaves. Let's take a call right now. I haven't heard from this brother in a long time, but we've got our dear friend, Apachu, on line one. Apachu, my friend, how you been, brother?
I've been good, man. I appreciate that introduction of
you. You got it.
Nice of you. Hey, a couple things. First of all, let me start out by saying that whether you're aware of it or not, if it's just kind of ironic or by accident, the playing of that brother who was killed by his dad. What's that artist's name?
Marvin Gaye. Marvin Gaye, yeah.
Marvin Gaye. That was Marvin Gaye, right?
That was Marvin Gaye's Inner City Blues, yep.
Yeah, how ironic that that was made back in the 60s, and after this election, we might be going back there. So,
man.
So I thought it was very, very ironic, man. Anyway, let me say that I know the formula that they're using on the ranking of the teams.
Okay, what's that about?
Okay, are you a member of the SEC? Okay, mm-hmm. It is so obvious that they are biased with the SEC.
Uh-huh.
You know, and they busted themselves last week when they put Texas A&M in there. That was absolutely ridiculous. You know, and they want, and I can see how they market Alabama. Okay. And I can see how they market Ohio State, but they got to open that up. My suggestion is, and I would love to see conference champions playing against each other in the playoffs, because what that would do is just make the whole year so valuable, the conference championship so valuable, because there's a chance that a conference champion or two, or excuse me, somebody who isn't a conference champion or two are going to be in the Final Four, or the Final Six, or the Final Eight. So I would love to see conference champions play against each other for the national championship. And that may mean one game more, but I would just love to see that. What do you think about that, Al?
I agree with you, Apachu. But this is the thing that you do, though. When you have the Power 5 conferences, you automatically know that when you do that, you're going to have one team from the Power 5 that isn't going to make it. Now, this reigns true this year because we all know no team from the Big 12 is going to make the college football playoff this year. That's obvious. So you still got four of the Power 5 still left, so you can have those respective conference champions play against each other. But it's the thing, though. This is why I love this system. Again, the flaw is it needs to expand to give other teams who have had stout years a chance to prove that they can dance with the big boys. But at the same time, you know, when you limit it to just four, you could be, you know, let's say in the eyes of the committee that Michigan and Ohio State, you know, or let's even say this, just hypothetically here. Let's say that Michigan ends up playing Wisconsin in Indy for the Big Ten championship game. Let's say that they're both having fantastic years and they approach that game both undefeated, you know, the best of the East going against the best of the West. And the committee says that, you know, in the eyes of many, both Michigan and Wisconsin are two of the best teams in the game of college football right now. If you limit it to just conference champions, then you're taking away that opinion because you automatically have to put the winner of that conference champion game in there. When Wisconsin, even though they lost to Michigan, may still be better than other conference champions in the SEC or one of those other Power 5 conferences like the SEC. You know what I mean? So it needs to expand. When you limit it to just four teams, there are so many other arguments that are going to persist that allude to another team being in there, in that dance. Expand the thing and make everybody happy.
Al, I grew up when the American League champion played against the National League champion.
Certainly.
In the World Series.
Right.
Okay? And then what they did, they subdivided into conferences, okay, two conferences in each league. And then they eventually came up with a wild card. Detroit Tigers did not play that well this year yet. In the last day or two, we were on the edge of our seat thinking they might get into that tournament called the World Series. So that's what I want to see. I want to see tension. If there's two Big Ten teams and one or two SEC teams playing in a national championship, mm-hmm. they're going to lose an audience. Part of their audience will be gone because there's nothing at stake. We're very regional people in many ways. Okay, I don't care about the West Coast, but if the West Coast is in the playoffs and two West Coast teams and somebody from the South, I really don't care. But if they got anybody, for example, when MSU was dominating the Big Ten, it was very exciting to have somebody from the Big Ten representing. And when that's gone, you just lose that tenacity and intensity and that, you know, being on the edge of your seat and having that conference pride and so forth. And I think they need to reevaluate that. It's getting better, I admit that. Mm-hmm. You know, especially since my team's doing good. You know,
right? Yeah, the Maize and Blue have been lights out this year,
man. It's been a good year. I just hope they hang on, man. Hope they hang on.
I hear you.
And MSU's coming back.
And I want to make this point too about you before we move on. Hey, and you talk about that SEC bias. And our production assistant Kamen made this point when we hit this first break. Texas A&M loses, and they only fall from 4 to 8. They only fall 4 spots. I mean, come on. Yeah. Come on. Yeah. How do they stay in the top 10? I don't know. I don't get that.
Yeah. Anyway, thank you, brother. Appreciate it, man.
You got it, Apache. Always, my man. And I want to invite Kamen Kessler to the show right now, one of our fantastic production assistants that have been doing some outstanding work this semester here on the show. Kamen, you made a great point. I mean, Texas A&M and Isaac, Texas A&M falling just 4 spots. That did shock me. Kamen?
Well, there's just no consistency there for me. When you look at LSU and the caliber of the team they played in Alabama, and they played a really good game, they drop 11 spots.
Right.
And then you look at A&M, and they play a poor Mississippi State team. And I know Trevor Knight gets injured at quarterback early on in the game, and they're rolling with a backup quarterback. But if you're a top four team in the country, you should still be beating that team. And I don't get how you only drop them 4 there, but you drop LSU 11. That's just not consistent enough for me, and it's kind of strange. I didn't think they deserved to be 4 to begin with last week.
Mm-hmm. I didn't either. Yeah.
I actually have Ohio State there and then Washington 5th, but I think Washington ultimately makes the playoff, and the winner of Ohio State, Michigan, takes one of the spots in there, whether it be 2 or 3.
Right. Process of elimination when you discuss OSU and U of M, certainly.
Yeah, I think Texas A&M at best. I agree, Kamen, is 10th ranked team in the nation or something like that currently. I don't think there's anything that exceptional about this program. Trevor Knight, you've got to respect what he did as quarterback of this team, but with him out, Mississippi State is still very winnable. And for you to go down, not just down in a 7-3 upset or something like that, triple overtime, they were down by a decent amount for a fair portion of this game. Texas A&M simply was untested, unbloodied, and they proved it. They weren't ready for the calluses that they'd received by Mississippi State.
Yeah, yeah. I don't get it. The Aggies have lost 2 of their last 3. You know, a 19-point loss to Bama. You know, nothing to be ashamed about. This past Saturday's upset at the hands of Mississippi State, though. You know, a 3-5 squad at the time. Left no excuses. And you dropped them just 4 spots? Riddle me that, as I always love to say, all right? let's move on here. We're going to get to the Detroit Red Wings with Kamen in just a second. I want to play a quick feature that I put together on MSU head turf manager Amy Foudy, who has been doing this job for 26 years. I got a chance to actually visit Amy at Spartan Stadium, and she took me out at on the field at Spartan Stadium. It was so cool because Amy and I, you know, I did the interview. I'm interviewing her. And, you know, she says, all right, Al, you know, do your thing, you know, and I'll be around. And she left the field at Spartan Stadium. I tell you, folks, it was such an eerie moment for me. And pretty cool, I must say, as well. I was in the stadium alone. Like, and you guys know, I mean, Spartan Stadium, that's a stadium. I mean, that's a big college football stadium. And, you know, I've covered many games there dating back to my time in college up until now. And, you know, I was in that stadium, and I looked around. I thought there would be just somebody walking around. There was absolutely nobody. Just nobody on the field, in the stands. I mean, nobody there. That feeling was a little weird, but it was also pretty cool. But, you know, I really got some insight into what it takes, you know, just the groundwork, the grunt work that goes into making sure that the turf every single Saturday for a Michigan State football home game is up to par and suitable for the players to play on. I gained a ton of respect for Amy Foudy and the job that those groundskeepers do. There's so much that goes into it. There's so much science that goes into it. Check it out. Here is my chat with Amy Foudy, MSU head turf manager.
Musician David Allen Coe once said, "It's not the beauty of a building you should look at. It's the construction of the foundation that will stand the test of time." And since the age of 16, MSU sports turf manager Amy Foudy has regulated foundation after foundation.
So I've been 26 years working in the turf grass profession, whether it was on a golf course or athletic fields.
The process of taking care of the field at Spartan Stadium isn't your average water and mow front lawn, and preparation starts quite early.
Well, really, the whole process starts probably the Monday after the spring game. We get going on taking care, you know, regrowing it in, making it healthy, dense, ready to go for the fall.
The field at Spartan Stadium, which officially opened in 1923, featured a natural grass playing surface until artificial turf was installed in 1969. The stadium returned to natural grass in 2002. And in 2005, the turf won Field of the Year honors from the Sports Turf Managers Association.
It's a beautiful day.
That was a really huge challenge, the U2 concert.
Then U2 came to town for the 360 Tour concert at Spartan Stadium in 2011. The world-renowned rock band putting on quite the spectacle, so much so that the entire turf had to undergo complete replacement.
You know, it's like the entire university came together for this one event, and it was really, really special, but it was a challenge for everybody. This grass came out of Colorado. We needed to make sure for longevity of the surface that we matched our soils up very, very, very carefully. And all across the country, we sampled soils, and that was the only place that we could find that we could get what we wanted to sustain the surface for many, many years to come.
The rival of field conditions is an obvious one.
You know, Mother Nature is always our nemesis.
Right.
or our friend.
And for Amy, an MSU grad, she actually worked for the rival, serving as head groundskeeper at U of M from 1999 to 2003, before coming back to East Lansing.
It was a really interesting experience to be down there and experience those kind of glory years of Lloyd Carr before he retired.
And who did she root for back then?
We always root for the paycheck.
That's a good answer.
Ah, Beautiful Day by U2. Love that track. And I remember that was my first month or two on the internship at WLNS TV6 when I was a student here at Michigan State University. And Lisa Byington, who happened to be the second reporter at Channel 6 at the time, that was one of my very first stories that I went out and covered with her, was the U2 concert coming that summer to Spartan Stadium. Such a huge spectacle. Isaac, have you seen the pictures from that concert back in, I believe, 2011?
No, I actually haven't.
Oh,
I must.
Oh, my goodness.
Just have missed out, seriously.
A concert unlike any other, dude. It was called the 360 Tour, as you heard in the piece. And they had this structure that looked something like a spaceship. I kid you not. And, you know, it planted right on the grass, you know, and dug deep into the grass much so that they, as I stated, they had to go out and ship turf from Colorado. But that was a huge undertaking that Foudy and her staff had to undergo. But I have such a respect for groundskeepers, you know, because there's so much that goes into prepping the field for an athletic event, you know, not even just in the game of football, but baseball as well. And Foudy has a huge hand in that as well. I mean, she's the head MSU turf manager, not just at Spartan Stadium, but she handles the baseball fields here on campus, you know, the soccer field here on campus. I mean, she does a lot in the work that goes into that, the mowing, heck, the painting of the logo on the field, you know, making sure that the soil is just right for that match. It's really unbelievable, and it goes completely over my head.
Well, and MSU actually has an associate's degree in the field.
They
had a friend in it, and when he first told me, you know, I asked him, what's your major, or whatever, and he said something like turf management. I was trying to figure what does turf mean? Because I just didn't think grass right. was that complicated, but it really is. And now he works for the Lansing Lugnuts, actually, Richard Goodyear. But yeah, it's really a cool science to it. And when you think about all the beating that this takes, and when you think about playing out in the neighborhood park with your friends and comparing that to what MSU players play on, boy, they could not do the same things that they do if not for the turf management. It sounds corny, but that's absolutely the case.
It's very, very true. And I, you know, just a quick tidbit before we hit our final break here. I asked Amy, you know, you didn't hear it in the piece, but I asked her, I mean, what's the you know, when you were at U of M, I mean, how big of a challenge was that turf in comparison to Spartan Stadium? And, you know, when she was at U of M, they pretty much had an artificial turf for most of her tenure there. So, you know, as I stated in the piece, MSU, you know, had artificial turf, which it looked, you know, when you look at those old videos of Michigan State's artificial turf back in like the 90s, I mean, oh my, it looks like a video game, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
It looks pretty good. It looks like a handball court. You know, that you would see at IM West, something like that. I'm like, how did they play on that? I mean, you could probably just put on your Jordans and go out there and rock out a game, right? But I technology has certainly advanced in the field as well and made the conditions a lot better for many. And I want to pose this question to you, Isaac, because I find this very interesting. And I see that Kobe Bryant has also weighed in on this. But when it comes to soccer players, female soccer players, women's soccer, I know that a lot of them, if not all, if I'm not mistaken here, and you correct me if I'm wrong, but they play on artificial turf. And,
they do.
And they are very upset about it and are actually petitioning for the rules to be changed because, I mean, it's basically like playing on carpet. I mean, I see, you know, the burns in the injuries that some of these female soccer players go through, and they're posting them on social media to spark this change. And they're bleeding left and right, and they're going through all these injuries, and they have, like, basically what I equate to as rug burn. And Kobe has spoken out about it and wants the change to happen. I mean, why has it that change happened? I think that's a pretty much a no-brainer, right?
Yeah, well, what I think it is just cost efficiency. But it is absolutely ridiculous to expect professional soccer players to play on artificial turf. I remember my first experience playing on it was when we evacuated to Atlanta after Katrina. I had no idea what artificial turf was. Mm-hmm. I was playing football with some friends, and I dove for a pass, and I came up, my knees were all bloodied, and I was absolutely shocked. You know, I'm in fourth grade. I'm traumatized. But anyway, it's these soccer players. Soccer is a game where you do have your joints exposed, your elbows and knees entirely exposed.
Yeah.
You also have to make all sorts of tiny particular cuts. It's not like football where you run the route and you've got one big hitch in it and then you move from there.
And in football, they've got long socks on, pads. I mean, so much, all this
sleeves,
equipment. Yeah, so if they fall on artificial turf, I mean, it's highly unlikely that they will get, you know, rug burn.
Exactly. I mean, and even so, if you're playing football, the last thing you're worried about is rug burn at that. But no, for soccer, there's just so much chance not only for rug burn, but slippages and things like that.
Certainly.
When you play on artificial turf, you can't dig in as much. It needs to change. They need to find the proper equipment for these women to play on.
And well, I'm gonna do some more research because I want to see what, you know, what level to the extent of this is, because I know in College of Ken, you know the women's soccer team here at Michigan State, I mean, they play on grass, of course, and it varies depending on the level of sports. So that sounds like a feature to me. Another feature to me on that realm of the field, you know, and the field conditions of athletes everywhere. Final break. When we come back, we will chat about the Detroit Red Wings finally snapping a long losing streak out in Philly. And also, Mark Cuban, owner of the Dallas Mavericks in the NBA, has revoked their credentials of a few ESPN reporters. We'll explain that and more. You are listening to WKER's Current Sports.
I'm Warren Olney. On the next To the Point, the election's over after the angriest, most bitter presidential campaign in recent history, and a polarized country is still so divided, the wounds might not be mended anytime soon. We'll look at the results of the voting and what it means for the leadership of both political parties and the issues facing the country. Next time on To the Point from Public Radio International.
To the Point this afternoon at 2 on AM 870 WKAR.
Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. Man, I'm running off. And Isaac, I don't know why I'm complaining because you're going through it worse than me right now. You didn't get much sleep last night. You were out covering the campaign trail. 2 hours of sleep for you. Yeah. About 4 hours, four and a half for me.
Hey, that's something to complain about still. Yeah.
I was up watching the long, you know, fought battle that, you know, and I was glued to my TV. It was a long, hard fought battle. And history was certainly made last night. Folks, what I'm talking about is Detroit Red Wings. Did you like that? You thought I was going with the election, right?
No, Detroit Red Wings. I knew you were going
Yeah. The Red Wings, they finally get a win out in Philadelphia for the first time since 1997. That's a long, long losing streak, folks. And right now, I want to invite to the show, you heard his voice earlier on in the hour. We have Kamen Kessler, one of our current sports production assistants, who is one of our hockey experts. He loves his hockey, and actually he actually covers the MSU hockey team. I want to talk Wings, though, here, Kamen. I mean, just kind of put in context what this mean wins for the Wings. Again, first time they've won out in Philly since 97.
So it's kind of a strange phenomenon. It wasn't quite the Cubs streak, but they did win for the first time since 97, and that was a pretty significant win. It had been 11 straight losses, but the last win there was Game 2 of the Stanley Cup Finals when Detroit swept Philadelphia 4-0. Mm-hmm. So they won 3 games that year, once in the regular season and then twice in the Stanley Cup Finals against Philadelphia. Then 12 straight regular season games, 11 straight games overall in Philadelphia. It was kind of strange. I know you're not a big hockey guy yourself, so
no,
you won't know
but
that.
We covered a wing, so.
Yeah, Detroit used to be in the Western Conference, and the scheduling changed a bunch in 2013, 2014. So with Detroit in the West and Philadelphia in the East, they didn't necessarily play every year, nor did, if they did play, did they play in Philadelphia that often. So the streak's a little bit, or it sounds a little bit worse than it actually was.
11-game losing streak, right? That's still a lot, though.
It's still
and
a long streak.
The 90s, I mean, I was 7 years old the last time the Wings went out in Philly. That's still a long, long losing streak, Kamen.
It is, and actually, a little fun fact for you. Wells Fargo Center, where the Flyers play now, went through three name changes before the Wings got a win there.
Wow. So. That puts things in perspective, right? Yeah. So this is a team again. They had to earn that win too last night. I mean, it was a close game. They pull it out nonetheless. The Wings heading into that game, they headed into that game limping a bit, you know, because they had lost, you know, 5 straight, and now they return home to play Vancouver. I mean, what's your just overall analysis? And we have just 2 minutes here left in the show. We'll dive more into this on tomorrow's show for sure. But what's been your analysis of the very young season of the Wings thus far?
They've been really inconsistent offensively, which is what I thought would be the case coming into the year. I actually had them in my predictions just missing out on the playoffs and ending a streak. I know a lot of Wings fans aren't going to like that. But over the last 5 games, they had only scored 9 goals, weren't getting the wins. And they did have a nice winning streak before that. But this is actually their worst 13-game start, or going into last night, was their worst 13-game start since 2003. And they're really just going to be searching for offense. Now, I think they outplayed Philadelphia last night, and Howard was good, and Athanasiou was great for them, everything. But I think that's going to be the real struggle for them. Now, Vancouver's not a great team, so I'll actually be there Thursday night, hopefully.
Really? You'll be in the house at the Joe on Thursday.
I will be
when they play Vancouver. That's pretty cool stuff.
So I'm hoping they can continue the streak there, but they're going to need to find a lot more offense. Like Tatar was mentioned, only has 2 goals this year. Definitely needs to step up. Just a lot of guys lacking offensively, and that's where they really need to improve.
All right, well, we look for a recap from that Thursday game, and since you'll be in his house at the Joe, downtown Detroit. Kamen, thank you so much, my man. Well, unfortunately, we are out of time, but much love and much thanks to all of you out there for tuning in. with me, Al Martin, on this edition of Current Sports on WKAR AM 870. Much love to Amy Foudy, MSU head turf manager, for her gracious time and showing me just really giving me an insight into what goes on as far as prepping the turf at Spartan Stadium and beyond. As always, take care. Have one fantastic afternoon. And be easy, people.